I have two storytellers that I really like right now in my adult life, Aaron Sorkin and John Grisham. Grisham writes books, and Sorkin writes movies, TV shows, and plays. Now, just a couple months ago, I saw Aaron Sorkin's play adaptation of To Kill a Mockingbird, and I was mesmerized. The man knows how to write a story that draws me in, leaves me clues about where we're going, and keeps me laughing along the way. In fact, I think that's one of his specific gifts, is to throw in just the right one-liners at the right time to keep you interested and laughing along the way. And then just this week, I finished John Grisham's latest book, and he does a very similar thing. A master storyteller. I can't ever quite predict the outcome. There are clues along the way, and I tend to fall in love with the characters. He's able to paint them just in such a way that you kind of start to feel like you know the person that you're reading about. He gives me something funny or fascinating or just connecting enough to keep me reading page after page, and often keep me reading a little bit later than I should at night. I get invested in the people, the facts, the questions enough that I want to keep going. And you know, it's never all clear until the very end, right? A good story of any kind doesn't really wrap itself all up till the end. The pieces don't fit until the very last chapter. The mystery isn't solved until the last final pages. The people are not revealed completely, their motives or their reasons. The story is not over until it is all the way over. But along the way, the journey of getting there, good storytellers, they give us gifts, right? Just enough to keep us listening and following. Since December 1st, we have been taking you on a journey, the Advent Labyrinth journey, right? It probably hasn't all made sense to all of you different weeks at different times for many different reasons. And I have a confession to make today. It's not going to be all wrapped up nicely today either. Because this is not the end of the story. You all right? I got a cough drop. You need one? Oh, someone's handing you. We'll just all cough together here today. It's not the end of the story. December 2019 is not the end of the story. It's just the end of a year. And Christmas is not the end of the story. In fact, it's just a really big event and chapter in the bigger story that God is still writing. Now, it's easily one of my favorite chapters because there's not much better than the author entering the story himself. And in the most unexpected and riskiest sort of ways. Emmanuel, God with us, right in the middle of the journey of twists and turns. It's glory, and it's glorious, and it's love, and it's strength. But it isn't the end. There's more story and more journey. And today I want to focus on our last gift of the journey for this year and this sermon series. The previous gifts that we have been giving to Jesus, they've been hard ones, haven't they? Because our journey is kind of messy. And let's face it, we're kind of a mess, aren't we? We have chaos and fear and pain around us and in us. And often we feel like that's all we have to offer to God. The not good. But today, I want to talk about the fact that we do have more to offer than just the not good. Because though we are born turned away from God and turned into ourselves, we are also born and made in the image of God. It says so right at the beginning of the story. In Genesis 1:27, God created humans in God's own image. In the divine image, God created them. Male and female, God created them. And you know what? That means that we are good. That we have goodness. That we have good gifts to offer to God as well. So today I want to focus on those good gifts. Gifts of our unique creativity. We all have something to offer. And what you have to offer is unique to you. No one brings exactly what you bring. No one is exactly who you are. Now, to illustrate that for a moment, I'm going to do something that I definitely don't usually do in 8:30 service, but I think at the ends of each of your rows, there are a paper that has 30 circles on it. So does everybody have one of those? You need to grab one and a pen or a pencil just to keep you all awake here. Because I'll confess that I haven't gotten enough sleep the last two nights. I was with my family this week, and I may have stayed up a lot later than usual Friday evening talking to my sister-in-law late into the night, having a good time. And then I may have stayed up a little late last night trying to finish this sermon since I was having so much holiday fun this week. Okay, so everybody got your pen or pencil and your 30 circles? Your challenge is you have 3 minutes. I'm going to get my phone here so I can set my timer. You have 3 minutes to draw as many different objects out of those circles as you can. They don't have to be works of art. You just have 3 minutes. But put your thinking cap on, your imagination. How many different things can you make out of those circles? All right, everybody got it? Yes? You awake? All right, ready? Go. All right, time's up. Did anyone get all 30 filled in? You got how many? 50? You are amazing. All right, you get the candy prize for the day. Sorry, Eric, I brought candy, but you didn't win. Eric was requesting candy during service. Oh, I'm a terrible throw. Although I got it right on the seat there for you. I know. Right after Christmas, we needed more candy, right? Okay, so 50. Oh, my word. Betsy is like the creative genius here. Okay, so for your next task, you need to find one or two other people and compare circles and see if you have any that other people didn't have. Like, is yours exactly the same as the other people next to you? Or do you have some? Did you come up with at least one that someone else does not have? So this is your pass the peace time. So get up and pass the circles. Speak, compare notes. And see if you have one that nobody else has. Oh, all right. But that's still pretty creative that you came up with 50. Talk amongst yourselves. All right, as you're headed back to your seats, does anyone have one that they think probably no one else in the room has? I'm not going to be surprised if Mike has one that no one else has. Just a second. Who, Marlon, who do you think has one? All right. What do you got that you think nobody else has? Oh, wait. She's got that too. They took the whole bottom row and made it into a centipede. All right. Denora, what do you got? A pair of glasses. She took two together and made glasses. Mike had that too. Oh, Sandy's got a labyrinth. Did anyone else have a labyrinth? Yes. Good job, Sandy. A car. All right. You had what? A hamster ball. I'm not thinking anyone else came up with that. I did a bicycle last night. So, yeah, I had 17 of them last night in my 3 minutes. 17. The end of a pencil. Oh, my goodness, you guys are amazing. I love this. All right, so donuts. What was that? A round Band-Aid, says the woman who works at a hospital. I love it. All right, now, why is it that none of us got exactly the same circles? It's because none of us are exactly the same, right? The odds, if you had filled out all 30, if every one of us had filled out all 30, I'm guessing the odds of any two people having exactly the same 30 is very, very small, right? So do you know that even identical twins are not exactly the same, right? That even though they have the same basic DNA to begin with, over time as their cells multiply, and they have different eating habits, sleeping habits, breathe different things, are exposed to different sicknesses, that they begin to have cells that have different DNA over time. Also, that identical twins do not have the same fingerprint, because our fingerprint is not formed from our DNA. It's actually formed, if Google is correct. Now, you know, take this or leave this. It was from some scientific study. It said that fingerprints actually are formed in when you are still in your mother, and when it's how you touch the embryonic sac at different ways, and that that's what forms a different fingerprint for every single person. So even identical twins don't have the same fingerprint. It's amazing. We're all different, even when we have some things that are the same. And all of us have something different to offer to God and to our world. You know, we all read with Pastor Eric this morning Psalm, it's actually 148. I had the wrong reference on there in your bulletin this morning. I forgot to change it. Psalm 148, it talked about all the different parts of the natural world praising God. I looked at that whole list. If you pull it out and look at it in front of you, there are actually 29 different objects in nature listed in that one chapter, that one song. And what if all of those looked exactly the same? How boring our world would be, right? What makes it so beautiful is that even the cedars, no two cedars are exactly the same, are they? They're similar, but the bark is different and the leaves, everything is different. And every one of them praises God in a unique and different way. And it's what makes our world so beautiful. Ephesians 2:10 tells us that we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works that he prepared for us to do beforehand. When we each bring our unique gifts to God and offer them up in good ways to love and serve others, then God has set up the systems of this world so that we get the gift of joy from him. We get joy when we give. This morning, I have made some photos of one of my favorite children's books that my mother bought me when I was an adult. She said, "Joanna, this reminds me of you." And at the time, I was reading stories to my neighborhood kids right down here on Walnut Street. Once a week, all the kids would come over and we would have porch night, and I would read them a story. And so she bought this book so that I could read it to them. And you know, sometimes children's stories tell it in the best and most creative way, right? So let's all pretend we're children again today, and I'm going to read to you the story by Ann Kemal Anderson called God's Little Dreamer. It was a glorious fall day. Madison pressed her nose against the window and watched the wind blow the leaves along the sidewalk. Madison loved days like this. Suddenly, someone came up behind her and tossed her up in the air. She knew who it was. Madison's dad tweaked her nose and smiled at her. "You are special, Madison. Have I told you that today?" "Not today, Dad," Madison grinned. "Well, you are special, and God made every girl and every boy to have dreams in their hearts so they can grow up and do something great." Madison thought for a minute. "What's a dream, Dad?" He smiled. "Dreams are ideas. Ideas about things we can do and people we can love if we are brave enough and strong enough. I know God has big plans for you." Madison's eyebrows frowned a little, the way they did when she was thinking hard. "My friend Anna wants to be a mommy, and Letty wants to be president, and Abdallah wants to drive a big truck when he grows up. Dinesh wants to race motorcycles. Is that what you're talking about, Dad?" "There are many kinds of dreams, Madison. Some are big and some are little. But every dream can change the world." "Dad, what should my dream be? I want something special to dream about." Madison's dad smoothed her hair. "Ask God to give you a special dream. The dream God gives you will make you feel happy inside." Madison sat very still, dreaming big dreams while she twisted and tugged her braids. Finally, her dad stood up and said, "It's time to eat. Let's go inside." That night, as Madison drifted off, she thought more about dreams. The light of the moon spilled in through her window and filled the room with its silver glow. As she drifted off to sleep, the moon seemed to say, "Don't worry, Madison. God has a dream or two just for you." The next day, Madison went to play with her friend Lila. Lila always wanted to color together. She would color so wonderfully, always choosing the right crayon and never coloring outside the lines. "Maybe my special dream is to color like Lila," thought Madison, as they started their coloring pages. Lila's big brother Benji walked in. "What you doing?" "We are artists," Lila announced. "Oh, well, why don't you have a contest and I'll be the judge," said Benji. Madison's eyes sparkled as she looked through the box to get just the right colors, and she colored so very carefully. She was sure her picture would win. When the pictures were finished, Benji looked closely at each one. Madison held her breath. "Lila wins," Benji announced. Lila smiled proudly, but Madison's face got very red. She wanted to throw the box of crayons and her coloring book across the room. She ran very fast out of Lila's house. She would never color again. She cried all the way back to her house. Maybe dreams were too hard. Madison almost ran into her dad as she burst through the door. "What's the matter?" he asked. Between sobs, she told him about the contest. Madison's father pulled her onto his lap and wrapped his arms around her. His hug helped her to stop shaking. He waited until she had stopped crying, and then he said, "Madison, dreams cannot live in your heart if there are bad feelings growing inside. Just because your picture didn't win doesn't mean it isn't a pretty picture, or that God doesn't love you just as much." Madison sighed, sniffed a little, and hugged her dad. Then she went into the bathroom and shut the door. She stood on tiptoe, looked in the mirror, and wiped away the tears from her cheeks. "Madison," she said to herself, "maybe you could let God help you find a dream." She put on her coat and went outside to walk through the leaves. Why are dreams so hard? She wondered. She wanted so much to have her own special dream. Madison had almost reached the end of the block when she saw Neil sitting at the curb. His chin was on his knees. Neil was in her class at school, but she never talked to him. The other kids made fun of him. His ears stuck out, and his thick glasses made his eyes look big. Madison started to walk by, but then she stopped. Neil looked so lonely. Madison walked slowly over to the curb and stood there for a minute. Then she plopped down next to Neil. "Hi," she said. Neil didn't answer. Madison tried again. "My mom is baking cookies. They're still warm from the oven. Would you like to come over to my house?" For a long time, Neil didn't say anything. He just stared at her with his big, sad eyes. Madison finally stood up and held out her hand to Neil. This time, he smiled back, and they walked to her house together. That night, Madison's father sat at the end of her bed and said, "Madison, I saw you do something today that was magnificent." "Magnificent? What does that mean?" Magnificent is when God takes someone very simple, like you or me, and splashes sparkles all around and over their dreams to make them big and great, to make them shine. Loving people, Madison, is the most magnificent dream of all. "How could I do that?" asked Madison. "You sit with someone at lunch if no one else does. You play with them if they have no one to play with. You share your toys, your happy thoughts, and even your fears with them." Madison thought about Neil, and her eyes began to shine. She was only one simple little girl with braids and imagination. But she and God could make a difference in the world by loving others. Madison threw her arms around her dad. "Oh, Dad, with this dream, every day is magnificent." Every day. I found a recent research experiment published just this year that verifies this gift of joy and magnificence. Now, it's actually a fascinating study because it contradicts previous research that was related. So researchers have found that usually the more often we experience something, that our happiness about that experience gets less and less. For example, you may love going to a particular coffee shop or a park, but every time you go, it makes you a little less happy than it did the time before. We seem to be people who tire of doing the same thing over and over again too many times. We need new experiences to get the same amount of happiness. So in order to keep the same amount of happiness, we may need to find a different coffee shop or a different park or even a different kind of place altogether. However, the exception that they found is giving. The research says that each time we give, we feel the same amount of happiness. So they did this one experiment where they gave college students $5 every day for 5 days. They had to spend that money the same way each day. Some of them had to spend it on themselves, and some of them had to spend it on someone else, like leaving a tip in a jar or donating to a charity. At the end of each day, the students had to think about their experience and their overall happiness. From a total of 96 students, the conclusion was that those who spent money on themselves felt less and less happy throughout the week. And the ones who gave every day felt just as happy on day 5 as they did on day 1. How interesting it is that science and research is proving what God has said from the very beginning. That when we focus on others, when we love others as we love ourselves, that is where we find meaning and joy. And friends, it might just make us magnificent. And that magnificence grows, I believe, when a bunch of us simple little people get together and each one of us does our part and we do it together. How beautiful our church is, because when each of us shows up and smiles and serves and provides our unique fingerprints to all that happen here, we are central. We are one people with one story, journeying one step at a time. And we can do it together joyfully and magnificently when we all bring our unique gifts to God and use them to love others. God is still writing our story, our individual stories, our story as a church, our story as a community, and God's big story of the kingdom. He's still writing that story. We don't know the end yet, exactly, but God has promised that the end is good. We have something to look forward to. And he gives us many gifts of joy along the way. And a whole bunch of those gifts of joy include giving to others, don't they? So let's keep walking and serving and giving together.